Hello, everyone, and welcome to the plenary session of the inaugural Archive Space member meeting. I'm just going to read off here, so it might be a little dry at the very beginning. But at first, I'm going to introduce all four speakers at once, including myself, which is always a little awkward. And then we'll move on to the presentations. After the presentations, we should have ample time for what we hope will be a highly interactive question and answer session. So please feel free to ask your questions at the microphones once the presentations are over. Or you can also ask questions via Twitter if you use this hashtag. And I've only seen two tweets so far using this today, so this is, you know, encouragement to do that. You can also take this time while I do the introductions to the presenters to tweet as well if you'd like. So first up, we're going to hear from John Herbert. John is the Director of Digital Programs at Lyrisys. He has served as the head of digital ventures and program director for the Utah Digital Newspapers Program at the University of Utah. Prior to working at the University of Utah, John served in several technology and operations leadership positions at the American Express Traveler's Check Group. John holds a Master's of Business Administration from the University of Utah and a Bachelor of Arts in Computer Sciences and Mathematics from the University of Kansas. Next up will be Patrick Galligan. Patrick is an Archive Space super user. Patrick spends much of his time wrangling metadata, exploring new systems, training employees, writing documentation, preserving digital objects, and examining new and legacy data. And despite all of that, has also found time to watch a lot of Parks and Recreation, which you'll see a little bit about later. And again, yeah, sorry. Patrick also is has been basically in charge of implementing Archive Space at the Rockefeller Archive Center. And he also graduated from the University of Michigan School of Information. After Patrick, Mark Custer, that's me, I will come back up to the podium. And I'm a member of the Archive Space Committee at Yale University, which I'll be talking a little bit about, as well as a former member of the Archive Space Users Advisory Council. I have gained substantial experience with archival metadata management systems and practices by helping to implement Archivist Toolkit at three different institutions, East Carolina University, the Smithsonian, and the Beinecke Rare Book and Manuscript Library, which is where I'm currently at. And also, I'm a graduate of the School of Information Studies at Syracuse University. For our final talk, we'll hear from Melissa Wisner. Melissa is the Manager of Enterprise Systems and Programming Services at Yale University Library. For the past 9 years, Melissa has frequently served as a project manager for large-scale software implementations, and she has recently been integral in Yale's work to help standardize and centralize IT support for our Special Collections Department. Melissa's undergraduate background is in the humanities, despite being an IT professional, and she holds a master's in management information systems. So now, to get us started, I'll turn things over to John.
Thanks, Mark. Just as a bit more on my background, yes, I am from the University of Kansas. We have a fellow Jayhawk here in the room, Rock Chalk. So... And it's very rare that I get to one-up Robert, but he mentioned Fortune 500. I've got a Dow 30 company on Robert, so that's pretty rare. So, I am for the last few months the program director the director for digital services at Lyrisys. As Robert was explaining, we're a membership organization. 2,000 members, give or take. Archives, libraries, and museums are our core constituencies. And as the hand-raising was going on, the lines are blurring between them now, of course. And we have a range of services across all three constituencies. So in spite of that sort of breadth of the operations at Lyrisys, I'm going to focus on a narrow niche today. I'm going to talk about, of course, not only just archive space, but archive space implementations. That's the theme of the panel today. And me is sort of in the lead-off role. I'm going to focus on smaller institutions, sort of the key decision points and things for you to think about as you might approach implementing the software, sort of high-level tasks. Okay, now, of course, as Angela and Brad and others and Robert mentioned, this is a membership community. I don't need to necessarily tell this group the benefits of joining the community, but of course there are many. You get access to the best of the open source software, I think, as sort of the theme in the introductory comments. ArchivesSpace community, I think, is a model. As I'm learning the open source space, what I see through ArchivesSpace and the membership, the governance and the software, the platform, it's all very active. All the pieces are fitting together. It's a model. Most others aren't this effective, in my humble opinion. So you get the best of the open source, user documentation training we talked about. There's data migration. There's a couple of tools in place for Archon and ATK. Others are being developed. I'm going to talk more about that in a minute. And, of course, you can participate in the community. You can participate in the governance. You can help shape the future of the platform. So some of the things I'm just going to run through sort of quickly, the key decision points, software, servers, migration, theming, training, and support as you look at implementing the software. In fact, I don't want to hurt this laptop. In fact, we were talking, Mark and Patrick and I, one of the key things we've learned for the entire week is that you can actually access Mist online, right? We saw an icon on the desktop of this laptop, so it's important for us to know. Software, okay. For a smaller institution, as you look at bringing on ArchivesSpace, certainly our recommendation would be to start with the community-supported version of the platform. The benefits of that, of course, you stay on the straight upgrade path, and for a smaller institution, maybe doesn't have as many technological resources, is an important thing to consider. And unless you're going to release or develop your own release, don't fork the code. Develop plugins and, of course, attach them to the software. And be careful of those plugins if they're updating the database, because you can get astray off the upgrade path that way. There's a startup script to install software. It's available, of course. And just as an FYI, the public interface is turned on by default. The server setup, for the hardware side of this, the minimum system requirements are out there online. Of course, as with all softwares, the performance tuning is trial and error. You'll have to find your way through a little bit. MySQL needs to be used for the production. This is from my tech team, a recommendation. Don't use the demo database for your actual setup because it's difficult to migrate the data out of it. And, of course, you have to set up your security system certificates, SSL certificates, and domain names. Data migration, I was touched on this before. There are a couple of tools in place from the old gen systems, Archon and Archivist Toolkit. Those are in place. There's a little nuance with Archon. You've got to migrate it into ASPACE version 1.0.4, and then from there, upgrade. So it's a little sort of extra step in the Archon migration. And I think there's, as Carol was talking about, there's more work being planned or at least put in the roadmap for more custom types of migrations. It's an important part of onboarding. Theming. At Lyrisys, we use plugins to do our clients' branding. Be careful that you don't overwrite the ArchivesSpace views. And I think, as was mentioned, Angela was talking about, the public UI is being rewritten, so if you're customizing in there, be cautious about that because your work could get overwritten. And, of course, training. Certainly don't forget that. Depending on how big your shop is, you've got to get everybody trained. And, you know, the timing of the training and the depth of the training. And there is help from the Org Home as well as from Lyrisys if you would happen to be a hosting client around training. And some of the other members as well. Support. So if you're running your own shop, of course, you've got to monitor the system, not only get the hardware up and put the software on it, but you got to run it on a day-to-day basis. You got to monitor the system, understand uptime, keep it available. There's support issues, right? Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3 are the sort of basic user error, user training issues. Are there software bugs? Are there sort of major emergency sort of shutdowns? Those sorts of things. Who's going to address it? How quickly? How are you going to communicate with your users? You know, just the day-to-day operation of your system. You've got to figure out data backups. MySQL and Solr at a minimum. Those are the first bits. And of course, really, a backup is not any good unless you know how to recover from it, how to use it, right? So you've got to have a recovery plan with your data backups. Don't forget that. A lot of people take a backup and stick it on the shelf, but you might want to practice bringing that tape off the shelf and reloading it. Make sure you can rebuild from it. So that's a quick run through for me, and we're going to save questions till the end, right? Okay, I'm going to pitch it to Patrick. So.
Thanks, John. So it's Saturday afternoon after SA, so we're going to have some fun. So, start, give some context. The Rockefeller Archive Center is an independent operating foundation that preserves and makes available for research the archival collections of members of the Rockefeller family, also nonprofit organizations that they've started. We are at the very small level. We only have about 50 staff members total, but about 20 full-time archivists. On staff, and almost all of those work with ArchivesSpace now. We went live in December of 2014 after about a one full year process. And I'm just going to talk a little bit today about some challenges and successes we've had along the way, and hopefully give you an idea of what I'm sure a lot of you already know what you should be thinking about when implementing, but maybe where we as a small team ran into problems and what a lot of our time went into. I spent about 500 total hours in a year, and that was learning from the system completely from scratch all the way through adoption and essentially being the sole person responsible for it. There, our implementation team consisted of three people, my old manager, Sybil Schaefer, myself, and one of our sysadmins. And Sybil mainly directed my work, made sure I wasn't screwing anything up too much. Then the sysadmin set up our server for us. But other than that, I did everything else. So it's definitely possible in a small shop if you're working by yourself. So a little bit about our data to begin with. We have 14,000 name records, 8,200 subject records, 3,200 accession records, 11,000 resource records, and that's because we have library records in there, don't ask, and about 2,400 digital objects and growing at this point in time. I had very little experience with MySQL, had some Python experience, no way an expert, and you can learn on the job while you're going. And we were migrating from AT to ArchivesSpace, so it was a little bit simpler for us as opposed to having to migrate from, I know somebody said Rediscovery this morning, which is miserable. And we are not using the public this way. So that's a little bit of context. We are hosting ourselves. So jump into some challenges to start out. And so the challenges really will help you like understand where your time's gonna go, understand hopefully what you're gonna be spending most time on, and number one is data cleanup. And so that's what I looked like when I first started looking at our data. And so we had, and in some ways still have, very messy data, and I would just stress that it's never gonna be good enough, but you want it as good as possible. Because there are some things that we said, it's good enough, and then we migrate and we're like, now that we wanna be doing more, and I'll get into some of the more bigger opportunities that ArchivesSpace has lent us in the end, we have to go back and do more data cleanup. And you really only wanna have to do that once because it's not fun. But to give an idea, we had like extent types. I'm not gonna go through our entire list of like 22, but we had three different ways of saying box. We had box, boxes, boxes with parentheses around the ES. We had two volumes. One volume was capitalized, one wasn't. And that was just an example of every single controlled value list in our archivist toolkit setting. We also had problems with subjects, duplicated subjects, issues where we had one subject as a topic, once as a geographic term, and once as a local term. And why? I don't know. So you want to get that stuff done. That was probably a good quarter. I have a blog. We have a blog post up on the RAC website that goes breaks out directly exactly how many hours I spent on each section. That was probably a good quarter of the entire time. Besides learning, besides doing testing, it was data cleanup is the biggest problem that you'll face. And once you get a handle of that, and the how you get a handle of that is just getting your database, getting your data into a usable format that you can just play around with, that you can mess with. You don't have to be an expert. MySQL's actually pretty easy to do most of the stuff with. And once you get familiar with that, you're really powerful for what you're doing, what you want to do. You can avoid most data problems by having well-defined standards and documentation for description. And so that's what we've decided to do moving forward. You know, you can't do stuff about your, you can't do that with your legacy data. We understand things happened 35 years ago when you weren't there. But you can do that, you can make sure going forward you don't have to do data cleanup again when eventually we'll migrate away from archive space, however long that is. And so that leads us to migration testing. So that's kind of how I felt at the first migration. In fact, the first migration didn't work at all. I just had set something up incorrectly in the database. Second migration had only about 130 errors, which, you know, is if you've done the migration testing, that's actually pretty good. I was happy about that. And that's because of the time spent on the data cleanup beforehand. Migration testing is an iterative process, as with everything that I'll talk about. You want to do it 3-4 times with every version. When we started working on this project, I think it was version 1.01, and we finished with 1.12, I think, is what we went live to. So there are a lot of changes. There are a lot of, I don't remember the exact number of releases in between all of those. In the very beginning, migration testing and migration error reporting wasn't great. I got an error, status code 400, bad request, error null. I had no idea what that meant. So you just have to kind of like muddle through, understand what you're doing, test around a little bit. That's why it's really important to have your database, so you can look at exactly what's throwing the error and understand maybe you can see something in the data that's a little bit different, play around a little bit. But iterative testing is by far the most important part of migration testing. The tools for AT to archive space are great. I understand there are still issues with Archon, but just try, get on the listserv when you have questions. Understand your data, and everything will be okay. But sometimes you don't understand everything, and you gotta, when you're trying to fix things yourselves, because errors happen, archive space is still fairly new. It does have some bugs, it's young. And so one of our large challenges was understanding what was going wrong and why. And just the only way that we could do that is test. You gotta test. We have a production server and a development server. So every new release that comes out, we put on our development server and run it through like a rigorous course of testing. Every single functionality that was in the original, we essentially test in the next release. And that takes time. That's ongoing time for as long as you use the system. And That's kind of what you got to do. That's what happens with any software. And so when you're trying to troubleshoot new errors that come up, you have to figure out, it's very helpful for the community and for your own archive to understand why they're happening, document why they're happening. And so that's a lot of times. So every single new release when we were testing, we did this. We did a migration. We don't do migrations to the new releases anymore, but we did a migration before we had gone live into production. We export, we import, we have people play with it on staff that to kind of duplicate what they work, what the type of work they're doing. Sometimes these issues persist, but once you know what they are and what's causing them, it's easier for them to get fixed. And then finally, the big challenge was training. I had never really trained people before, so I had to like think on the fly, and part of training came with writing a whole lot of training documentation. But at the RAC, we have this, we like to call it a user-centric approach to any of the systems that we implement. And so a big part of that is getting your users involved as early in the process as possible. And by helping them understand why you're making the change and what the change will help them do and understanding how they do their work is vastly important to beating that fear that a lot of people have about new things. So we did usability testing with our users. We had one person from each functional group of the archive work with the software to understand, to replicate that the work they were doing at Archivist Toolkit in archive space, tell us where it wasn't working for them and where it was. And then we could develop training based upon that interaction and that feedback to directly relate to what they wanted to do and what we thought would have to change. I spent about 20 hours in training. Total, this is like just specifically training people on the software. And with every single group, we have reference, description, and accessioning, all using it in different ways. Get your documents in order, talk to people, let them see what's good, working well. And then we get into our successes because of this. So we had full data transfer, which was really, that was our one success point. It's sort of a caveat. We had three records that didn't transfer because they were so large. They were probably each about 15 megabytes in EAD. So not quite full, but about 99.9%, and we managed to just put those, break them up and put them in manually, and then rejoin them when they were in the system. So no missing data. That was, if we couldn't get that, we wouldn't have moved. User adoption has been great. There was a quick transition from AT to AS. People complain a little bit, but they will always complain sometimes. But overall, people love it. It's a lot more user-friendly. Also, you know, they were very receptive to not having to have somebody come and install a new version on their computer every time a new version was released, which is really nice. Then the new opportunities. And so what we've been really enjoying from ArchivesSpace, and because we messed around with the implementation, got things, our data in order, is that now we're letting the system do the work a machine should do, whereas we're starting to do work that only humans can do. For instance, my colleague Hillel Arnold recently wrote a series of scripts to automatically export EAD based upon when a resource record is updated. And it only takes ones that are deemed to be published online. And it will export those every night. So anything that was updated in the last 24 hours will get exported. Also, a PDF will get created from that. And it'll automatically get moved to our folder, to a certain folder, and then put up into our XTF collection. And we no longer have to have anybody, when they make a little change to the spelling or correct spelling, email somebody and say, hey, can you export this and put it in this folder, and then have to talk to Hillel and say, this is going up tomorrow. It's really simple. It's really easy. It's nice. The work that Yale's doing on the locations management plugin is going to be really exciting for us. We're also working on integrating with Archivematica to have automatic creation of resource of digital objects, and the work that the Bentley is doing is really exciting to us. So understand that it's an ongoing process, that once you're moved over to ArchivSpace, your work isn't done. But when you get there, it's a lot easier. And the data and migration are the biggest issues. But when you can get there, it'll be exciting. And then there's Mark.
So Patrick, I am instantly really jealous about hearing that you only had 20 plus extent types. That's yeah, pretty small. You should start importing some MARC records. You'll get some crazy ones. Also, yes, the other controlled value stuff. My favorite that I've seen that we've come across since now cleaned up. My favorite archival level of description that we had was rearies, and our favorite instance type I've come across was foddlers for folders. So you'll see why we need to stop spelling. All right, so my talk is going to be divided into two parts. First, I'm going to provide an overview of what we've done so far at Yale to implement ArchivSpace. And second, I'm going to close with five recommendations that I hope you'll find useful, regardless of where you're at in your own process of either evaluating, adopting, or using ArchivSpace in your daily work. Regarding the second part of my talk, I should also mention that even though I'm representing a very large institution with multiple special collections departments, I firmly believe that all of the recommendations that I'm going to offer today can be applied to an organization of any size once it undertakes a metadata migration project or goes about the process of implementing a new piece of software. And the reason that I believe what I just said is due to personal experience. I've previously been responsible for a number of different metadata migrations that were carried out in the process of implementing new software. In each case, the steps and the checklist remained virtually the same, even though the scale of data that needed to be migrated and the sophistication of the software that needed to be implemented were often dramatically different. Additionally, we just heard a very entertaining update from Patrick, who, while it wouldn't be precise to say that he was working entirely on his own, well, yeah, actually, I would say you pretty much were working entirely on your own to do the migration. So if one person can do it, I think anybody can do it. Yale's story involves many different players in significant ways, but our ultimate goal was always the same: to implement a single tool that each of our special collections departments could use to manage their archival workflows. So what exactly put us on the path to trying to adopt just a single tool? I won't start at the very beginning, as is often advised, but I will point back to the month of, March 2013. At that time, a special collections white paper was delivered to Yale University Library. The white paper outlined 8 different challenges that we faced, and it also included recommendations for how to address those challenges. The first recommendation listed in the white paper, which our library continues to refer to and take very seriously, advises that all of Yale's special collections units should use Archivist Toolkit or its planned successor, ArchivSpace, and Aeon to automate and integrate as many collection management tasks as possible. Given this recommendation, it didn't come as a surprise to me for Yale to officially become an ArchivSpace charter member in May 2013, just a few months after the white paper was distributed. Of course, Yale University Library already had close ties with ArchivSpace long before 2013, since Mark Matienzo served as the technical lead of ArchivSpace while the initial development of the software was still being funded by the Mellon Foundation, and even before ArchivSpace, found its organizational home at Lyrisys. The actual act of becoming charter members was nevertheless really important for us as an organization, especially because we joined the ArchivSpace membership community as Yale University, not just Yale University Library, which reinforced the true spirit of the white paper's first recommendation.
But even as newly registered charter members, we still had questions about how we would get to the point that all of Yale's special collections departments would be able to use the same tool to manage their collections. Therefore, shortly after we became charter members, Yale's Special Collections Steering Committee formed a task force to evaluate all of the different tools already in use in its departments and to provide a recommendation as to whether or not we should actually move to archive space as their single tool or as that single system. That task force